I'm Brian.
I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your source for the information and inspiration to help you start, manage, and grow your business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 246. 246, where did the time go?
Wow.
I know. I think it's 250. Well, it's just six away from 250 episodes.
Four away, if you do the math how I was taught.
Oh, yeah, four away. That's right. I was using the old math where we had an abacus, and I pushed the wrong beads up.
You pushed two extra beads across.
Brian, I'm not getting much sleep. Please don't make fun of me.
Why aren't you getting much sleep?
I don't know. It's been the last two nights. Yeah, I haven't been getting
You're still sleep. Still kind of getting used to your new place?
I'm kind of used to it. I miss my old bed, which is, I'll soon have it set up. I'm sleeping on an air mattress still. I think that might have something to do with it.
I'm sure. I mean, after weeks of doing that, I am sure that's the issue.
I've been on it a month. So I'm looking forward to, that. It's been lovely here in the desert this last week. The weather's been glorious. It's been really not too hot. There's been a lovely breeze. I sat out most of the day yesterday working in the back area.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it's been very nice here. So, yeah, I'm getting used to it. Lots of sand. We had a dust storm a couple of weeks ago. That was fun and a half.
I think I drove through one of those, not where you're at, but like when I was in Arizona.
Oh, they
had, it was like I had to slow way down and we actually had to get forced off the freeway.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. When they say dust storm here, it's just that the wind blows a lot of dust around, and then the backyard is coated with dust, and you have to kind of wipe it off. But, you know, first world problems.
Definitely. Well, at least the weather's not too hot, and you're able to enjoy the backyard.
That's true. And red letter day, I actually put three listings back up on eBay today.
Ah, good for you.
Yeah, my store has been empty for just about a month. I closed it before I drove down, a week before I drove down. I ended all my listings. I didn't put it on time away. I've got stuff kind of set up. I got my light box set up. I had some inventory. I opened it up and I said, I think I can ship this stuff. So I started listing things back up on eBay today. I think that's actually helping to center me. Being a month without any live listings after years of having them was a really weird feeling.
You still had them, right? Saved. You just had to push them live.
Yeah, it's been less than 90 days. So yeah, they were in my unsold column and I just double-checked the listing, double-checked the product, made sure it was intact and everything was there because you know how that happens. And
yes.
Then started listing because, you know, the other thing is I realized that I get questions and now I can't check my own listings to see if I can duplicate something because there was no listings up. I really felt kind of naked without listings.
You know, it's interesting you say that. Like I've gone through the process of listing some items recently. And then the other thing that I did was my 21-year-old daughter listed and successfully sold a couple items in the last week. Going through that process, Griff, was an eye-opener.
Why?
Because it was just like the flows and everything. And just like I had not gone through the registration flow. She had an account. She just didn't have a selling account. And so I had not gone through the selling account where you have to put your bank account up. And I made a mistake of trying to get her. I said, oh, well, you're going to list a whole bunch this summer. You're going to need a store. And so I went to do a store, but you can't get a store first. You have to actually sign up as a selling account, put all your selling information on. Then you can go get your store.
Yeah.
And so it kind of got us into a little bit of a loop because she was not a business seller. If you're a business seller, you can go straight in and you can get your store in advance.
Right.
But as a consumer seller, which she was because she's purchased but never sold, well, it was actually an interesting experience.
Is there anything from that experience that you could use as a suggestion for enhancement or improvement to our product team?
Yes, and I have, but I also feel like I caused them to go look at things that they didn't necessarily need to look at because I was unaware that there was the separation between the B2C and C2C flow for the store. And so it caused a little bit of confusion as they looked at what the flows were. But there was another change where they felt like they could communicate a little bit more clearly, especially around uploading your bank account. Because we say you need the bank account to get paid, but we make it optional for you to include.
Well, that doesn't make sense. That's like, no,
that's
we're
going to
keep your money.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one who thought that. But there's a reason for them doing it that way, which is sometimes someone may not have like their checking account or their bank account information with them right at that moment where they want to push the item. And so they don't want to necessarily block the ability for them to get the item up. For me, I thought, yeah, but now they have to figure out how do they enter that information and where do they enter that information at some other point in the process.
This was an ongoing concern for years where they didn't want to do anything in the registration. They were saying they.
Yes.
Our father gets us. We don't want to put anything in the way of the registration process to get people either registered or putting up a listing. And so we leave all that other onus now until, hey, you want to get paid? Well, now you got to give us your bank account. I guess it's a great incentive to put a bank account on.
Yes. I will say one other thing. She was very excited because I told her that, I told her that I have this thermal printer, so don't print the label when you sell. And so when we printed the label, she was very excited about how like nice that looked. And of course, I had some eBay packaging stuff, you know, some poly mailers with the eBay because of my store subscription. And so she saved a little money on that too. Maybe I should have charged her for that.
It's your daughter, Brian. Oh, you're so mercenary.
You know, she needs to understand our sellers have to factor those costs in.
Wow. I'm seeing a whole other side of you.
I didn't charge her, Griff. I'm just thinking about it right now. Maybe I should have.
No, I don't think you should have. She'll figure it out and then she'll know, you know, I got to pay this, I got to pay that.
She got excited, but you know what? It was interesting. She also realized she had three other things she wanted to list last night. And she goes, well, I can't list them because I don't have the right package. And I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, they won't fit. They're going to be too small. And so she was very conscientious about,
oh, good.
They were clothing items and they were bigger, like, and she could have stuffed them into those packages, but there's a next size up that would have been better. And in fact, there's a two sizes up that I ended up ordering that I think will be ideal for these like jackets kinds of things that she listed. But I told her, I said, list them. Because I said, if it sells quickly, we'll go get the right size envelope if they sell before the packaging stuff arrives.
So yeah, you're listing, yes. Your daughter's listing, I'm listing. It's all heaven.
And hopefully our sellers are listing. Maybe some of our sellers can write in and tell us something that they're listing that they don't normally list this summer.
Begging for content, are we?
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
I like it. And I'm going to go to Florida. Well, I will already be in Florida.
Yeah, you'll be in Florida when this airs. Yeah.
But this will be Tuesday. So I will be my second day in Florida. I'll be in Orlando.
All right. Well, that's enough chit chat for now, I think.
Do we have any guests this week?
Oh, yeah, we do. This week, we welcome Lori Rath. She's an eBay seller on eBay, of course. And she's going to talk about when you as a seller should consider hiring someone to help you run and grow your business on eBay. It's that whole topic about hiring help. Big stumbling block for a lot of people.
It is.
But before we get to Lori, is there any news this week, Brian?
The only news this week is that we just announced that our largest seller event of the year, eBay Open, is back. eBay Open 2023 returns this year as a hybrid event. The event kicks off with our in-person eBay Open Studio celebrations on September 26th, taking place in Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, and Phoenix. Virtual events will take place from September 27th through the 29th. Join over 10,000 sellers for insights, trends, and access to training sessions, seller-led sessions, category breakouts, inspiring keynotes, networking opportunities, and much more. We've also got a few other surprises up our sleeves, including a sponsor expo, free eBay swag giveaways each day, and many ways to celebrate being a small business owner on eBay. General registration begins August 1st, but you can sign up to get early access to register on July 31st. That way, you'll be first in line to grab a spot for the in-person eBay Open Studio events.
Right. And that's important because the last year, those events sold out within a matter of an hour. There's limited capacity at each of the venues. If you're in the Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, or Phoenix area, there are four of them this year, and you're interested in going to the in-person, you know, live in-person, the actual physical event location, then you got to register as soon as you can. Sign up for early access. Well, anyway, it just seemed like it was last year. We just had it. But time goes by so fast.
We did. It was September of last year.
I wonder if we'll ever be totally live again. People ask us all the time. I just say, no, there's no plans for that. Thank the pandemic. Now we can't really use it as an excuse. But who knows? We'll see.
Well, I'm looking forward to going live at least in one of those locations.
Well, that's right. You're going to go to one. Anyway, Have you ever wondered if you should maybe hire your first employee? Like the tasks are getting overwhelming and you seem to be stuck on an earnings plateau and you want to grow that business? Well, our next guest has some words of advice on that subject and you're going to want to listen. Over the years, I've talked to many eBay sellers, and most of them, not all of them, but most of them actually started their viable business on eBay. That's where they got their start. And over the years, I've also noticed that there are a lot of critical milestones on that journey from starting a business on eBay to growing it. For example, things like writing a structured business plan. Maybe it's finding the right sources of inventory, deciding on which inventory you want to sell, dedicating a space in your, most people start out in their homes. For your business operations, these are all really important milestones, but the one most critical decision any small business owner faces in that journey, including those who sell on eBay, is when to hire help, because a lack of decision on this point can make all the difference in the growth or stagnation of a small business. Lori Rath sells on eBay under the store name Jan's Jewelry Junction. She's informed me pre-recording that we could just say JJ Junction, which is easier. And she's here today to walk us through the why and when you should consider hiring your first employee and how to go about doing so the right way. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
This has been a topic of discussion among eBay sellers for years. And it's one of the scariest things to consider, I think, for a lot of sellers because it's an initial big expense. When should somebody consider hiring an employee?
Boy, that's a rabbit hole, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is a big discussion, and it's a discussion that I cover a lot in with people I mentor and people I've worked with on eBay and just amongst the eBay community. You're right, as a big community and with sellers that are small, you know, mom-pa at home, part-timers, people using it as their sideline, all the way to the big guys, you know, people want to scale and they expect that they can jump in quickly and do it all themselves. And that's great. And some people, you know, maybe when you're 20, you have that powerhouse, you know, I'm not that 20 anymore. I don't have that powerhouse ability. So yeah, coming up with the point at which you need to scale, it is critical. That is the pivot point. So I think the three things you need to think about when you're going to make that decision is, first, do you know your steps? Have you done it enough yourself to say, okay, these are the steps I do every day. What are the first five things you do? You answer your customer questions. You pull your inventory for shipping. You get it shipped into the post office. You get your new stuff ready to list. You take photos and stuff. Do you know those processes? Could you teach someone those processes? And could you break them down into a video or into a format that you can show them? I mean, having somebody that you want to hire who's a jack of all trades, that's great. But the reality, the likelihood of you finding that one person that has that is just not there, unless they're an eBayer and you're partnering with somebody who's done it. And, you know, for what you're probably going to want to pay when you start out, you're not going to be looking at someone who's going to necessarily have those skills. They may not have even used eBay. If you're talking to a young person, that's probably not their format place that they go to first. Sorry, said that out loud. But it's because a lot of people, they might have just been a buyer. Let's put it that way. They may not be a seller. They may be dealing more in social commerce. And so they're better at the social media aspect of it. And they find their links through there, which you can push your eBay out to your social media. But to find that person who can do everything, just not somewhere I suggest people start looking. Look for the pieces that maybe you hate the most. So that step one is find those things that you do, make sure you know them and can part out those pieces. Maybe you just like steaming clothes, or maybe you just like photography, or maybe you work all day and this is your sideline and you need somebody to post them up on your store. Finding those pieces and writing the list of, you know, what are all these various things I do? And then think of, okay, which ones do I hate? And which ones could I give to someone else that it maybe doesn't have to be perfect? Maybe 90% is good enough because you need the help. So starting with what I call on-demand help, small help, is probably the most effective way to go there. And then you have to break down how does that person work for you and how do you bring them in and those steps.
A lot of this, though, involves trust, doesn't it? Because if you're a single proprietor who's used to doing things your way, it might actually be difficult for some of us, and I'm including myself in this, to actually delegate operations and responsibilities to someone else. Because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, no one can do it as well as I do. This is not going to work. Is this a problem that you see sometimes with sellers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm laughing when you say that because nobody wants to give up control or keys to the kingdom. Nobody wants to, no, you should not give up your password and let them do all your work. No, that's not how it's set up and not how you should run a successful business. I mean, it's one thing to partner with someone. It's another to have someone help you. They're your employee, whether they're your family member or, you know, friend or someone you hire. You need to, you know, try them out. You need to give them a task and make sure they understand how to do it and way to do it. And you need to slowly give those control. I mean, maybe steaming clothes is not giving up a lot of control, you know, as long as they get the wrinkles out, that's good.
But I found a wrinkle right over here. You need to steam them out well enough.
Exactly.
Oh, my heavens.
Well, then send it back and say, okay, let's have some quality control. I really want all my wrinkles out before I'll take those photos. Or maybe the photos, you know, they say, oh, they're a great photographer, but when they, maybe they're not used to photography for online, get the white background on the right lighting. And maybe you need to say, hey, you know, I'd really like it if you use my setup, or let me help you get a good setup. We need more natural light. We need to get the colors to do. And hey, you know, sometimes purples and reds don't photo well. Here's the tricks I've learned. Don't be afraid to teach someone who, yes, may go on to bigger and better things, but that's okay because they'll teach you something. And you'll find that the more you mentor them and the more you're willing to share your knowledge, the better and more loyal that employee is going to be for you. They really are. The person who feels good about what they're doing and their contribution is going to stick around for you. Yeah, giving up control is the hardest thing any human, I think, can do when they feel they have that expertise. I think your next most important thing is to figure out what is the type of person that can help you with that step. Maybe the stay-at-home mom who loves to iron is the great steamer person, but maybe the young person on summer break is your great social media person or your great getting inventory ready for Christmas holidays. You know, it's summer when we're doing this and getting ready to get that inventory. I'm already looking at not only Christmas and July stuff, but what can I be doing to prep for the haul when it gets busy? This is a slower time of year. Using that on-demand person, maybe I don't need them all year long when I start. Maybe I say, okay, it's project or task-based. Hey, I need these 20 things photographed today. And if this works out, maybe we'll come up with a routine you'll do 20 every day, but create a task like getting stuff prepped for inventory, prepped for photos, prepped for shipping is a good way to bring in that part-time mom, that differently abled person. I often speak about my daughter who's got different abilities and has auditory processing challenges. So I can't teach her orally. I mean, I can say things, but it takes practice, the kinesthetic end of it. And it also takes her being able to remember it. Orally doesn't work. I have to also write it down, the steps, or have kind of a decision tree chart. You know, hey, if it's over a pound, you're going to need priority mail. If it's under a pound, you don't need priority mailbox. Helping her remember that and have something to reference helps me not have to go back and reteach it. And it also helps me, again, lose that little bit of control because I'm not worrying that I don't have to micromanage her because she has tools that she can look at. And I make videos. I mean, you can get videos on the eBay Academy. Those are great. You can find them online on social media, but do your own. Have somebody video you while you do a step, really quick, 30-second, 1-minute videos, just showing a process. Then they can refer back to it.
In the discussions that I see that among people that are considering hiring on help, there's always the pros and cons of virtual assistant versus having in-house help. What are your thoughts on this?
Virtual assistant's great when you work full-time or something like that, and this is your sideline, and you need help at random hours, anytime, doesn't matter when they do it, and they can do the computer aspect of it remotely. Somebody who can draft the text for your description, can maybe suggest a title, maybe do some research on comps for you, maybe tweak your photos, get them ready for editing, maybe need to remove the background. You can also set up virtual teams where people maybe do some sourcing for you, maybe help you build and expand that way. I've seen several very successful people build remote teams and therefore their business in general because their total aspect still comes back through the mother business, but they have people out there in different parts of the community, you know, different parts of the country looking for things. I see people using in-house for more the physical labor tasks, boxing, bagging, inventory control. photography things. But I do see people who do it kind of semi both. They give people stuff to take to their house, maybe. Hey, take these items, go steam them, go do the photography, bring them back to me. I don't think a lot of people want to have somebody necessarily come to their home, but a lot of people will set up a garage, a shop, a shed, something that's climate controlled where they can have them come to there. Or they, like I said, meet them up here. Here's a box. Let's trade off. Here's a box of new stuff to do. Go work on it. I think virtual is good when you're starting and you can grow quickly when you can get that little bit of extra help and pay them by the item rather than by the hour, because you don't know what it's going to take them. Once you've trained them, I would give them some hourly pay to get them trained, get them used to what you want and have them understand back and forth. But once you do that, maybe you piece rate it out and they can, every time they draft something or get it up to your eBay drafts for you, or maybe push it live. Maybe that helps you push live during the day when you're not around, or maybe you just want them to set them up in drafts and you schedule them. I think that is the greatest way to get another version of on-demand help.
There are lots of, I want to say fiscal responsibilities and requirements when you hire someone. What are some of the considerations that a seller should have in mind when it comes to the fiscal end of hiring someone? And is it as onerous and scary as a lot of people make out?
I guess it depends on what state you live in. It's so varied across the country. If you can keep a spreadsheet, you can keep track of things. It's not the end of the world to do that. Yes, you're going to have to report things. There's ways around that. You can use third-party services that provide virtual assistance, so you're paying for the third-party service and not then being the direct employer. They work for the third-party service, and so you still get the assistance, and that's a good way to manage it as just an expense of your business. You're getting a service. There's a lot of things that integrate with eBay that do bookkeeping, and you can use those to track that information. Keeping the employee as a 1099 independent contractor type employee is the easiest way to do it, because you're not dealing with payroll taxes. You know, you're paying them a certain amount to do the work, and that is not inclusive of benefits and other things that you would do maybe if you bring the person into your warehouse and, you know, have them, and you have to have the liability coverage and everything of having them in. But as part of a business, when you do deal with people, you need to think about things that can happen. Are they working with you in your space? Do you need insurance and liability? You should look into business insurance. Make sure it covers people if they're going to work with you. So there are things that have to be done. But again, if you don't know those things, hire an employment company to handle that for you. There are employment services that manage your employees for you. There are bookkeeping services who manage the fiscal end of it. You can outsource every aspect of your HR that you need to do. You don't need to do that. But start simple with friends and family who you can work out an arrangement with them. But you can also maybe trade time for services. Sometimes when I'm mentoring someone, I have something I want to learn from them. And so we trade services. And so that's a nice way to not have a cost, but I'm gaining as well as teaching others. Think about other places that have employees, like employee businesses that do temp hiring. They often will help you manage those employees while you bring them jobs to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think the big question that's almost the hardest one to answer is the when. If I'm sitting down and doing the numbers, what are some of the things that you can think of that I'm looking at and should be prepared for? I know there's going to be an initial expense, I'm paying for them, but what is the plan moving forward when it comes to the bottom line for my business?
Well, I would look at not waiting till you're at 110% and you're pushing yourself to the end before you start thinking about doing it and before you implement doing it. That's the biggest mistake I see people make in it, is they wait till they're at 110%, they're going a mile a minute, and they frankly don't seem to be able to carve out that time to make the decision to do the hiring, and they're going to burn out. And they're going to go back to the I'm good where I'm at level and never bring someone in. Yeah, there's an upfront expense. You can keep that focused by setting a budget through piece rate. Think about how much do you want to pay to steam clothing, $1 a piece, okay? You have 20 items. So you know your budget, and you should be able to, people run on the numbers that they want to at least 10x their money on what they paid into something. You have to sit down and say, okay, I got this piece of clothing from the bins. I paid $1. okay, I'm going to pay another dollar to steam it. I'm going to pay another $2 to get it drafted and listed. Okay, so I've got $4 into this item. So I need to make $40 from it, because that's sort of the cost of the goods becomes the $4 instead of the dollar. And then you got to figure, okay, there's the eBay expenses, the shipping expenses, and how, you know, who's going to do that. But if you assume the buyer pays the shipping, you know, and you factor that into your cost, so your $40 has to be able to pay you and that employee. So you've built in your cost. So if you're not building it in as a cost of goods, you're not thinking of it. You're just going to go, oh, I make $1,000 a month. Great. Okay. I pay employee $200 and I'm good. Well, did you pay yourself? No. Did you think about all your expenses and fees? No. Did you write, you know, oh, that's all write off. Well, yeah, but you're going to run into your cycling. Yes, you can afford the person, but you're not going to move ahead. Yes, you can if you do volume. Yes, the person should be able to increase your volume through efficiency, but you're not necessarily going to expand rapidly enough. Sometimes I tell people, when you get to 75% and you know what the goal is you want to achieve per month and the rate and pace that you're going will get you there if you worked 500% of what you're doing, now is the time. If I pay them a total of $3 out of house in addition to my cost of goods, then I need to know that I can spend that extra $3 on three more items that now I can multiply that. I know that sounds kind of convoluted in the math.
Actually, it doesn't.
It's 25% is what the number I say. You're going to see a 25% increase if you use them for, say, 2 to 3 tasks that you're doing. Time yourself. How long does it take you to do each piece of it? 15 minutes to write a listing, 15 minutes to steam the buying. Maybe it's a total of an hour to prep, pack, do all the, including your shipping and everything per item. Okay, well, how much do you want to make per hour? There are two basic models. Do you want to do the low dollar volume model, or do you want to do the higher dollar, less frequent sale model? I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've had to pivot, you know, jewelry became a saturated category for me. Oh, yeah. So I had to pivot. And then when I decided to retire a little early to take care of my daughter more, I needed to come up with a way to pivot. And that was right before COVID. I was not doing so much of the soft goods before COVID, but COVID changed my plan. People were not buying the career wear jewelry and grandma's china anymore. They were looking to improve their space. They were looking to work from home, maybe bring people in virtually. I mean, we all had to ramp up pretty quickly to the virtual stuff. If you look at what's trending and look at what's pivoting, you can think about, well, okay, I want to get into whatever space it is, say clothing, and you don't have a natural talent there, but you can do it. You know how to eBay, you know how to sell things. Okay, find the sources and then find the person who can take on that piece for you so you don't feel maxed out in pivoting to a new category.
If your plan is to expand, you should be willing to risk all of that gross income as an investment that's going to work for you in the future once expansion takes off. You have to believe in your business.
It's going to take 4 to 6 months for you to see serious return on investment. Assume you're going to need 4 months of not recouping their cost, whatever that cost ends up being, whether it be hourly or piece rate, and you need to see that as investment in your business.
And you run the risk, if you put this off, of having something that you might have a lot of passion for, whether it's selling in a particular field. Once you start getting burnt out, you're going to start resenting your own business. So don't let yourself come to that burnout point as well.
Yeah, we all need the work-life balance. We really do.
Lori, before we actually sign off, I want to make sure we mention your store again. It's JJ Junction is the user ID. The store name is Jan's Jewelry Junction. Go check out and see what she does. Do you recommend any third-party services or resources that a seller should avail themselves of before they make the decision, or if they're in the process of making the decision of actually bringing on assistance?
Yeah, if you're a multi-platform seller, you might consider an inventory management software. There's TaskRabbit, Fiverr, various services that provide individual task help for individual things. Like I said, employment services, go to your local employment services in your community. Find your local sheltered workshop, ARC, regional center, or someone that's got differently abled folks. And so I think those are suggestions that I would make in my mentorship group. If you need to reach me on social media, I'm JJ Junction pretty much anywhere.
We'll put links to that as well, to your social media as well as your eBay store. Lori, I want to thank you so much. I think I'm brimming with knowledge now about
This is fun. Thank you very much for inviting me. I like to chat and I can talk all day, so I appreciate it.
Lori Rath sells on eBay under the store name Jan's Jewelry Junction, or JJ Junction as the user ID. And she was here today to walk us through the why, when, and how you should consider hiring your first employee or assistants and how to do it right.
You got questions?
Well, we've got answers, and sometimes they're even accurate. This week, we have three email questions to address. First one is from eBay seller David. David writes, "Hey, Griffin, Brian, I sell numerous items that would be perfectly suited for the eBay standard envelope, but unfortunately, they aren't eligible for the program. To avoid paying $3 to $4 tracking for a 1 ounce envelope, I've been sending these items with regular postage stamps and no tracking. I understand that if a customer claims they didn't receive their order, I'll be responsible for issuing a refund." That's correct. "By using stamps instead of tracking, I save a whopping $3.50 in postage for each envelope. Not a single customer has complained about missing delivery so far. Seems to be working."
Yes.
"I've accumulated about $80 in postage savings in the last month. Potential loss from 1 out of every 10 envelopes going missing, knock on wood, it hasn't happened yet," David says, "would still be significantly less than the total amount I've saved. Because less than 96% of my sales are being shipped with tracking numbers, I'm on the verge of losing my top-rated seller status."
Oh.
"This means I'll miss out on the top-rated seller discount, but that's okay because my handling time is 3 days and the savings from postage far outweighs the 10% discount on eBay fees." I'm going to take a moment here and really thank David. You know why? Because he's making decisions based on data. He's done the numbers, he's run them, and he's done the scenarios, and he's figured out that it's kind of working for him just to send the stamps in an envelope.
I think what you've read so far is like the perfect example of a business decision.
Exactly.
He's making a business decision that's best for him. Forget eBay's rules or what we do or try to incent sellers to do. He's looking at what's best for his scenario and his business.
That's right. So, David, kudos to you. David goes on, Brian. He says, "When considering this method of sending ephemera or paper items through the mail in a first-class envelope, I've identified two drawbacks. I lose access to top-rated seller discounts, which he said he can absorb. And if a customer claims non-receipt of an envelope, I got to provide a refund." His question is, "Are there any other penalties or consequences from eBay that I should be aware of? Am I overlooking anything that may dampen my sales and render my significant postage savings not worth the trouble? Looking forward to your thoughts, David, also known on eBay under his user ID, Debit and Credits."
I remember him.
Yeah, we've had a conversation with David in the past.
Well, David, those two consequences and risks are the only serious ones. However, there is a slight possibility that your listings that don't provide a trackable shipping option might be slightly lowered in rank for best match, but there's no way to predict if that would be the case. It would depend on the number of returned results displayed to a buyer and the metrics of all the other sellers whose listings were returned in that search.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's that big a risk, because if you're not racking up actual demerits against or marks or the, you know, dings on your account because of these, then your performance metrics aren't going to result in any significant lowering in best match rankings. And it sounds like you're making sales, so that seems to be working. So I had to mention that, or we had to mention that one as a possible third, although minor, risk or consequence.
And I have one other one that's possible.
What?
And that's if a buyer is set on only purchasing from a top-rated plus. Well, he's not doing top-rated plus because he's got three-day handling.
Right.
So the only other thing is if someone clicked in and said, "Oh, you're not a top-rated seller, but you're making sales, so it's not impacting you."
Yeah, I don't think that's actually a concern at all anymore, because we removed the top-rated seller badge. It's now top-rated
plus
item. Yeah, I've said for years, and I wish we would do something about this. When we started the top-rated seller program back in, 2008? It was based around feedback ratings, a big part of it.
Yes.
Now it has nothing to do with customer ratings
at all.
And yet we still call it top rated. It really is time to rebrand that program.
Yeah. Well, our second question this week comes from eBay seller Paul, who wrote this to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, guys. I'm so glad I finally discovered the podcast. I listen every week now on my drive to my cross-border shipper. You have great information and are a lot of fun to listen to. I listened with great interest to the International Shipping Podcast, hoping that I would hear about any news for non-US-based sellers. US sellers have a few massive advantages over the rest of us, especially those of us in Canada. GSP, the new international shipping, eBay standard envelope, authentication services, all useful tools as long as you are in the USA. Is there anything in the works for the rest of us? Sometimes it feels like we are being left out. Best regards, Paul Giori, store name PL-randoms.
Poor Paul. He feels left out. It's not intentional, but alas, Paul, I got to be honest. And I think we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. There are no current Canadian equivalents to eBay International Shipping or the eBay Standard Envelope. Both of those are US-based only at the moment. I'm not sure if there are any plans for an authentication service for listings created on the ebay.ca site, but it's a case of no news is no news. And the reason why I say that is I know I've heard rumblings of some authentication services being started up and on other global sites. I actually think it's probably easier for eBay to create an authentication center inside a country site like Canada than it is to start something like eBay International Shipping from the Canadian side or eBay Standard Envelope, both of which require an enormous amount of negotiation and coordination with shipping providers. And in the case of this eBay Standard Envelope, it would have to be some negotiation with the Canadian equivalent of USPS, which is, as you know, Canada Post. And I'm not sure if that's on their docket. And if it is on their docket, kudos to them, because it's going to be an enormously complex project. Now, that's not to say that sometime in the future, such services might be available, but it would take, like I said, you know, lots of negotiations with Canada Post, for example. So I guess stay tuned in the long term. But for now, sorry, Paul, there's no equivalent. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to send him to his local, I was going to say congressional, but I don't think that's the case. His local representative,
MP.
His MP. And he can say, hey, we're not as competitive as U.S. sellers because we don't have this deal with Canada Post, and see if his MP will take it up with Canada Post. But that's a long shot.
It's a long shot, but businesses like eBay can have some impact with government relations in getting stuff moving like that, so that any roadblocks, any bureaucratic roadblocks or obstacles can be pushed aside. It just makes sense. I mean, well, our third email for this week was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Pamela, and she wrote, "Hello, Griff and Brian. A few months ago, I spent an afternoon updating my mess of business policies after you talked about them on your podcast. Oh, I'm so sorry, Pamela. They'd been working beautifully until 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
I noticed I had a bunch of duplicate shipping policies with strings of numbers in their names. I usually list quickly from my iPhone, and I didn't notice the app was changing the business policy after I selected the one I wanted to use and before I saved it. Even after intentionally going in and changing it back again, a duplicate was created. I cannot choose my original policies in the app anymore. I contacted eBay for Business, and I had a text exchange with them." That's through Facebook, I believe. "They submitted my issue and said they had similar complaints and are working on it. Writing to see if you had any insight into what was going on and when a solution might be available. Listing for my laptop is slower for me, so hoping this gets fixed quickly. Thanks for your help. Pamela, known on eBay as Purple Guppy." This has a lot to do with the international shipping program.
Yes. Well, Pamela, thank you for the question. As part of eBay's international shipping program updates, eBay International Standard Delivery was deprecated. And as a result, international shipping options were removed from your listing, and a new policy was automatically generated to reflect these updates. Over the next few weeks, we will be working to remove the outdated business policies. In the meantime, it is advisable to refrain from using the old policies as eBay International Standard Delivery is being phased out. By the end of June, the issue will be completely resolved and you will not see those old policies in your account anymore. Eligible listings have converted to eBay International Shipping. If your listing is not eligible for eBay International Shipping, you will have to add your own international shipping services by creating new business policies. For example, you might create a new policy for shipping that includes an international option like USPS Priority International or UPS or FedEx International Shipping.
So anyway, I think that answers the questions, Pamela. But yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Write us back, Pamela. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you have a question like Pamela or a comment, don't keep it to yourself. Call it in to us at 888-723-4630.
That's 888-723-4630. You can call that hotline at your convenience. Leave a question or comment and your shipping address if you want one of our nifty new USB eBay for Business podcast mugs. And if your question's appropriate and doesn't contain too much profanity, we just might put it on the air.
And if you're not a call-on-the-phone person, email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
It's now time for your three-point podcast checklist, Brian.
Check the announcement board at ebay.com/announcements for up-to-date seller news every day, like our announcement of eBay Open.
Now it's time to start sourcing your fall and holiday inventory if you haven't started already. So don't wait till it's too late. Summer sourcing can offer the best opportunity for picking up merchandise to list for the last quarter of the year, and often at reasonable prices.
Need to review anything in this episode? It's easy. Check the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to find the links we referenced during the episode.
And speaking of our next episode, on that episode, we're going to meet with a guy named Kevin Reith. He's the founder of an old online bookkeeping website called Outright, which some sellers look back on fondly. Outright is now just a memory, but Kevin has a brand new service he built for eBay sellers. It's called Seller Ledger. It's like Outright, only better. And he's going to join us next time to tell us more about this new service.
We'd like to again thank our guest this week, eBay seller Lori Ratz.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.